Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome back to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. You know, we talk regularly about the 5K challenge and how it's changed lives, both taking the class and teaching the class. Well, this week we're going to share a story from a lady who had never run before, and she experienced and taught the class at the same time. So she explains how it changed her in that process. And then I'm going to share a story about a runner who was God's servant in every sense of the word. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
So we had dinner at my house last night, and we were sitting on the back porch. What did you notice?
It was cool.
Chilly.
Yeah.
It was, you almost needed a jacket last night.
Yeah, so I was a little cold.
It's that time of the year, Dean.
It is.
My favorite time of the year. Fall is in the air. Football's on TV. It's about time to start decorating for Christmas. If you're me.
it's true. I have to hang around with, I hang around with you, who's really excited about the fall coming, and then Debbie, who hates the fall and wants it to stay summer year round.
Yeah, that's Holly.
Yeah.
She loves the heat.
Yeah. So but it's
I love the seasons here we live at. And
Well, I told Debbie, I said, I'm going to run a race this weekend.
Yeah.
And I told her that first hard run that you do when it's cold.
Yeah.
Feels great.
It's like you gain 30 seconds a mile just without even doing anything.
Yes, it feels so good. I'm like, I can't wait till Saturday morning.
Yeah. So where are you running at?
I'm going to run up at Moccasin Bend.
Oh, okay.
Run the 10K up there. I've run that, I don't know, probably 10 times over the years. And it's a good test to see where I'm at.
Now, is that on the road going to the – okay.
It is.
Yeah. That's about as flat as it gets.
It is. Very, very flat.
Well, good luck on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, our post of the week comes from Patsy Arnold. Patsy turned 59. She says, 5.9 miles on my 59th birthday, and it was fantastic. Okay. No one runs 5.9 miles, so of course I did six. I ran the first mile outside, and lightning alarms went off twice in 5 minutes, so I ran to the house and jumped on the hamster wheel. Then I noticed it looked okay outside and finished the last four. Even got rained on mile six. So awesome. God is gracious. Now, first of all, I take exception to this. I have done 5.9 mile runs or, you know, something similar to that in the past. So wrong with 5.9 miles.
There's two types of people. There's people that run even mileages. Like she said, she ran 6 miles. And then there's psychopaths. They will run 5.9 miles. There is no way I could allow myself to hit stop on 5.9 miles. I just can't do it. But this is where you and I differ.
Yeah.
You know, you can do that. So this is where I need a little bit of you, and you need a little bit of me.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we got to equal
But I'm with Patsy. Even though she's 59 and she was going to run 5.9 miles, she just – She couldn't hit stop on her watch, and I get it.
Yeah, you know, every other week I run with Darren, and so a lot of times
Darren's got to be like me.
Yes.
Okay.
And I just run whatever he runs.
Right.
So you know, I'll run, and we'll get through, and I'll have 5.9 miles on my watch, and he's like, well, you can run if you want to run up there. I'll wait for you. I'm like, I'm good. It's fine. Whatever. I like these birthday celebration runs. One of the things that I like about these things is it's always good to break things up a little bit from a monotony of running. I mean, running can be a pretty monotonous thing. And so trying to find different ways to make it more exciting is pretty cool. And, of course, your birthday is a great time to do that. And there's a lot of ways you can do that. You know, you can run with somebody you don't normally run with. you can run a different distance than you normally run, or a different route than you normally run, or run with headphones if you normally don't, or without headphones if you normally do. Turn your watch off. I like that one. There's a lot of ways to switch it up. And I would encourage folks who sometimes have a hard time getting out the door, that's a good way to do it sometimes, to get yourself out the door, is to do something different.
Yeah. You know, so many times we use something to celebrate a run. So, like, you know, we'll make the mistake of, I'm going to eat a whole chocolate cake after I run this marathon. Use running as the way to celebrate something.
Yeah.
You know, like Lane, he's graduating college this December, going to be done with cross country. And he told us the other night he wanted to run 50 miles. And I was like, why do you want to do that? You know, I think Lane's never run over like 16 or 17. He said, because I want to.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think you're going to take a stab at going as far as you can with them. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, but, I may try.
Yeah, I mean, use running as the celebration. A lot of times we do it the other way around. We use something to celebrate running. It's not good a lot of times.
So. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, our run of the week comes from Mike Powers. He says, I finished the 10-miler of the race series this morning. It's the hardest race I've ever run. The course is no joke. I walked just a couple of times up some really steep hills. Other than that, I ran most of the race. I'm really happy with my time. I ran my third fastest 10-miler. My average pace was a whole minute faster per mile than when I ran the 8-miler on the same course back in January. I felt really great during the race, and I'm encouraged how I ran the race today. I can say I have conquered the beast. I run this 10-miler again in 2 weeks and then run 2 half marathons. I will then end the year running the St. Jude half marathon. I was late to church this morning, but I am glad I got to go and worship with my family and participate in the Lord's Supper. It's always great to go back to a place where you struggled at one time before, a particular race or a course or whatever, and then knock it out of the park like he did here. That always feels so good. You could hear it in his post. But sounds like he's got a lot of racing going on.
Yeah, yeah. Even when I was running a lot, I never really raced more than once a quarter. I always used a race to finish off a training block.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it was a 5K, a 10K, a half, or a full, kind of like we do with the Couch to Marathon. I guess because I'm one of those people that I don't necessarily like racing.
Yeah.
I like training more than I like racing.
Yeah.
Just the anxiousness and the
Landon and I were talking about that yesterday,
really?
Last night. Yeah.
Yeah. Lane's the same way. Lane likes to train.
Yeah, he does.
And, I guess for that reason, but I do like having those as kind of those benchmarks, those waypoints that you can look back to, like he said. And then if you don't do it right, do it again the next year.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to track yourself. But yeah, I know some people that during the peak seasons of race season, they'll be racing every weekend somewhere.
I've been on
That's
both.
That's expensive, number one.
It is, yeah. I've been on both sides of it. Yeah. I've been on the side where you race a lot, 2-3 times a month to, you know, over the last few years, I just don't race much. I race just 2 or 3 races a year probably. But I enjoyed it when I was racing a lot. I think it helps. It helps because you're digging so deep so often that it becomes easier to dig deep. And so I think racing often helps you to get better.
I think especially if you're very competitive, you know, I used to always see the value, like when Lane was young and he was very competitive, racing a lot, although it doesn't make sense physically often, it helps you to get used to that atmosphere because, if you race once a year, man, the jitters and the anxiety and everything that you have when you haven't raced in a long time are there. But if you race pretty often, then you show up for a big race and it's just another race.
Yep.
And you don't have as much. So there's pros and cons to both. But yeah, I'm one of those that even when I was running a lot, I didn't race a lot.
But did you try in training to put yourself kind of in almost like race type situations? No, not really.
Because I've never been.
You never been big on the race. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've always. My drive has always been something different than.
Yeah.
Because I mean. Racing just hurts.
I like it.
I know you do. Yeah.
Uh, Well, last week's trivia question. Usain Bolt is the fastest man who ever lived. His 9.58 100 meter performance in 2009 is still the world record. He survived the 2008 Olympics in Beijing by eating a very specific type of food while he was there. As a matter of fact, he is on record saying he ate 1,000 of them. What was it he ate? You had no idea, did you? Did this surprise you?
It did, yeah.
So apparently, the commissary, the food, whatever the food provider was at the athlete's village, didn't have a lot of stuff that he liked. Mm-hmm. But he found one place where he had this one thing that he liked.
It's and the place it was, that sells crack cocaine.
Yeah.
I mean, chicken nuggets.
And it was a McDonald's.
Yeah.
And he says that he ate over 1,000 chicken nuggets at McDonald's during the 2008 Olympics.
Now, there's going to be people that disagree with me. And I agree that they're not the healthiest thing. They're not. But I genuinely like the taste of a McDonald's chicken nugget. I know all the, you know, I've seen all the videos and I've seen all the stuff that says it's like a chicken paste or whatever, but they're good.
They are good.
Yeah. But I tend to stay away from them because I know they're not the best thing for you.
Well, you know, from a running standpoint, that you wouldn't. I mean, I know he's a sprinter, so it I guess nutrition is probably a little bit different for a sprinter, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't think it would be a lot different. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine any middle distance or distance runner ever having done this ever.
Yeah.
Right. But it made me think about Babe Ruth. You know, stories of Babe Ruth are legendary about how he would eat 4 or 5 hot dogs in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, if you go back further, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but at one time back in like in 1800s, late 1800s, they would have like whiskey at third base. So that if you made it to third base, you took a shot of whiskey during the game.
Really?
Yes.
Well, now I've seen the pictures. There's posters like in bike shops and stuff of the Tour de France in the early years. And they would literally camp out in between stages. They didn't stay in hotels and they would be smoking and drinking and everything. The night, you know, it's 31 days or whatever of stages. And they would be drinking and carrying on and carousing all hours of the night. And it just shows you how things have changed for sure. But this brings up a topic that I wanted to ask you about. And, you know, I listen. There's a handful of podcasts that I try to listen to every week. Have you noticed how many of the podcasts right now are raising the awareness? We've already talked about it once on here, but are raising the awareness about processed foods. It's almost like it's gotten in the news cycle or something. You know, Brandon Kaywood, one of our buddies here in town he's a filmmaker. You know, he made the documentary To Die For, D-I-E, no, D-Y-E.
D-Y-E,
talking about the food dyes and all that stuff. And and it's different people. It's not the same people making the rounds on these podcasts like for a book tour or something. Mm-hmm. It's all different people. And I don't really know what's driving that. I mean, it's good. You know, they're raising all these questions about things that are put in our foods in America are outlawed in most every other country. So have you heard what's kind of driving that conversation all of a sudden?
Here's my thoughts. My thoughts are, I think there have been a number of people who have talked about this for years.
Yeah.
Well, we know that we have. We've seen them.
Sure.
There have been documentaries. There have been other things that have been going on. But I think that RFK is probably...
That's true.
I think he's the reason why...
He has been mentioned in about every one of these podcasts I've heard. So maybe he's the common thread.
Yes, of it. And I know there are people who think the man is crazy. And there's some things he thinks that I don't agree with at all. But...
On that topic, he's on to something.
He is on to something. Yeah. I just bought the book by Casey Means. I can't remember. Good Energy, I think it's called.
Okay.
And I'm really looking forward to reading it. I've just read the first chapter, but I'm really looking forward to it. Because she became huge when she was on the Tucker Carlson show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her and her brother were on the Tucker.
I think I listened to that. That was the one, probably one of the first ones I heard what, about a month ago, maybe?
I think that did a lot to really kickstart all this. Because Tucker Carlson, he has, whether you like him or not, again, he has a big platform. Right. And a lot of people heard that. And now Casey Means has been all over a lot of podcasts.
She was the one that went to Stanford, became a doctor, and then left the practice.
Because she felt like we were not making people healthy. We weren't worried about trying to stop people from being sick. We were worried about treating people once they got sick.
Yeah. And that's, you know.
And it's true.
That's what I said a few weeks ago, and we'll just kind of leave it at this. Dean and I are not, you know, we're not experts, subject matter experts. But all we're saying is, do your own research, because there's a lot being said out there right now that I'm convinced there's a lot of truth there. And, you know, we're not conspiracy guys, but do your own research. Know what you're putting in your mouth. Know what you're eating. It's important.
Well, and I think everybody in a deep gut level knows that an organic apple is better than a chicken nugget. I mean, we know that, yeah. Right? Just on a gut level, because it just makes sense. And so I always like Michelle Spatafora from Faithful Workout. She always said, eat foods as close to the way God provided them to us as possible, and you'll be
It's really common sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
Okay, Dean, so I'm going to do a shameless plug here. So you've heard me pounding the drum for a couple months now about January the 13th. We're kicking off classes all over the country for the 5K Challenge. The church model's coming back. It's going to be awesome. I've talked to, I don't know how many people I've talked to personally, you know, some of our former coaches, you know, getting them back in. And so now we're switching over to some webinars. And so Jennifer at Upward and I are putting all these together, and it's going to kind of be a back and forth forum on these webinars talking about the new church model. So if you have any questions, you haven't reached out to us yet, reach out to us now. We've got one coming up October the 29th at 7:30 p.m. And if you're listening to this and you've been a former coach, or you're thinking about becoming a coach, I want you to join us on this webinar. So you need to send an email to customerservice@runforgod.com and just say, hey, I want to be part of the October 29th webinar, because it will be a closed group. But I would love to have you. Like I said, if you've been thinking about it, God's been kind of tapping you on the shoulder, let this be the slap on the back. Yeah. If you're thinking about it, we want you to join us. You're about to hear a story of somebody who taught a 5K challenge in the past, and they weren't even a runner. Mm-hmm. So guess what the answer to the question, do I have to be a runner to teach one of these classes, is?
Absolutely not.
The best way to learn is to teach. So there's no excuses.
Well, and the truth is this, that I'm a runner. I'm a lifetime runner. Everybody knows me as the runner, right? Yeah. So I'm intimidating to people who don't run because it's like, well, he knows everything, and I don't know why. I don't have any business with, you know, in a class with him, and so you actually have some more credibility.
Yeah.
If you're not a runner,
they're in the trenches with you. Yeah. You're in the trenches with them. So yeah, to your point, you're right. They've got more credibility than you do being in the classroom for this setting. So again, October the 29th, 7:30 p.m. We're going to be hosting a webinar on the subject of the 5K challenge, the church model coming back. We're going to give you all the details, answer all your questions. We want you to be there. Send an email to customerservice@runforgod.com. We'll get you signed up for it.
Don't miss it. Well, I got this. This is from First Alert 4 in St. Louis, Missouri. This says, runner with Down syndrome makes history, runs 50th half marathon in Missouri. This is really cool. A runner with Down syndrome completed a long-standing goal Sunday, running 50 half marathons across each of the 50 U.S. states. Daniel Chaplin completed his goal Sunday morning. It took him just over 4 hours to complete the Mo Cowbell half marathon in St. Charles, crossing the finish line to huge cheers from his friends and family. This is the most excited I have ever been, Chaplin said. I never thought I'd make it to this point. So he started this 12 years ago. He lives in Alabama now. His older brother, Vernon, says Daniel's story is as cool as it is inspiring. He says, quote, physical strength was never his strong suit, and to be able to do something that's hard for a lot of people, he can prove how far he can go. Race organizers and the Chaplin family plan to submit Daniel's accomplishment to the Guinness Book of World Records. But for Daniel, this is also about perseverance and proving to the world that Down syndrome can't stop him or anyone else when you put your mind to it. He says, people with Down syndrome can make a difference in this world, and it shows that people with Down syndrome really are more alike than different. And I love this race. The Mo Cowbell Marathon brings together runners of all ability levels from across the world. It's the biggest year ever for the event. More than 5,400 runners competed in four events, a full marathon, a half marathon, a 10K, and a 5K. It's a cool story. I've wanted to run this Mo Cowbell race for a long time. Do you know where that comes from?
Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if Saturday Night Live got it from this or if they got their name from Saturday Night Live.
No, this came from the Saturday Night Live. Really? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great. Great stuff. But anyway, this is cool. This is a Down syndrome guy that just that said, you know, that I don't have to be limited. Yeah. The way the world sometimes thinks that I have to be limited. And
which is an awesome attitude. I mean, yes. We can learn. Every one of us can learn from this guy's example.
Yeah, you may not have Down syndrome, but you may be an unlikely person
you're
to do something.
You're sitting out there saying, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman has proven you can do it.
Yep. Pretty cool story. Well, this week, we're going to share a little bit older story about how the 5K challenge can change you. It comes from Jennifer Gonzalez. It's called The Finish Line. When I say I was not a runner before this journey began, it's not an understatement. I had never run a mile in my entire life. I was blessed with an eye condition that kept me from playing most sports in junior high and high school. I believed the lie that I was not an athlete and had settled for what I thought was the best I could do. When a Bible study called Run for God was brought to my attention, I was intrigued. I really felt that God was calling me to teach this study. That was craziness. Remember, I had never run a mile. There was no way I could run 3 miles, and besides that, I was the last person in the world to teach other people about fitness. That is where a life-changing journey with my Savior began. I went through the study in its entirety to make sure I could do it before I asked anyone else to join me. After several 5K races and a half marathon, God has taught me so many lessons through my running journey. Here are a few. 1. I learned that I am more than I once thought I was. Romans 8:37 says that we are more than conquerors through Christ who gave us strength. I had believed the lies about my fitness and my faith. My God is able and desires a real relationship with me. When I rely on His strength, He will make me more than I seem for His glory. 2. I can worship anywhere. Worship is about focusing on Jesus and giving Him the glory. I can do that while cooking dinner, teaching school, driving down the road, or running. I have worshiped Jesus many times on the road, just He and I. 3, if I don't constantly fill my mind with truth, I will inevitably believe lies. I must remain in His Word daily. Regardless of how many miles I have run, I still doubt myself. I doubt my ability, and I begin to believe I can't do it. I can fight these lies because I have done it many times. When Satan tries to fill my mind with lies about my worth, I can fight him with truth because I have been there. I know that my identity lies in the fact that I am a child of the King. I have experienced him and can rest assured of the fact he never changes. I fight lies with truth. Number four, I must run my race. My race plaque bears this phrase: I have learned that God created me intentionally. He has created me with a purpose. My purpose is to glorify Him in everything I do. God has given me talents and spheres of influence, intending that I run my race to the best of my ability. He doesn't want me wasting energy on bitterness, envy, unforgiveness, or even apathy. He needs me to train for and run my race to bring glory to Him. My weakness then demonstrates His strength. I can never teach this class without knowing that blessings come from stepping outside our comfort zone. However, probably the most important lesson I have learned through my journey is the importance of a finish line. The finish line is the most important part of a race. It is the reason for our joy as runners. The finish line represents victory. No runner has ever been upset to see the finish line. We welcome it. We strain to see it. We run harder when we can catch a vision of it. It motivates, inspires, and demands our best. When running a 5K or a marathon, the finish line represents the completion of a goal. We fix our eyes on it, knowing that it is the reason for all of our training, all our sweat, all our tears, all our pain, and all our sacrifice. As you cross that finish line, it all seems worth it. With people cheering you on, the finish line brings forth indescribable pride and emotion. So how does this apply to our faith? In 2 Timothy 4:7, Paul says it best, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved His appearing." Paul knew that the finish line was Jesus. He knew that nothing mattered apart from an eternity with his Savior. Heaven and eternity with our Savior is clearly our finish line. This should motivate and inspire us. It should demand our best. It should influence our every decision. It requires training in the Word. It requires time and sacrifice. When we are able to stand face to face with the God who loved us enough to send His one and only Son to die for us, it will be worth all the training, sweat, tears, pain, and sacrifice. It will all be worth it. Focus on the finish line. Nothing else matters.
That's a great story, and there's a lot of great reminders in there.
Yeah.
I guess two things that stood out to me before we get into the questions is, did you notice, I think we could run right past one thing she said. I was blessed with an eye condition.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that really stood out to me. I don't know what the eye condition is, but anything to do with the eyes, I can imagine I would look at that as a negative. I mean, anything that affects your vision negatively, but she looked at it as a blessing. The second one was the phrase, "I can worship anywhere." When I read this, it really made me think of a couple things. We look at worship many times in two ways, and both of them are wrong. She said, "I can worship anywhere." How many times do we think that worship is only for the confines of the church?
Yeah.
And so therefore we don't do it anywhere else because, well, that's for church. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's another camp of people that say, "Well, I can worship anywhere." So they go sit in their deer stand or they go to their lake and they say, "I can worship anywhere, therefore I don't have to go to church." These things are not mutually exclusive. They're independent. Church and worship are two different things. Worship is something we should do anywhere and everywhere, and church is absolutely something we should be a part of because that is our community, that is our family. And I don't know. That just really stood out to me. Not even when I was studying it on my own. It's when you read it. It just kind of jumped out at me. And that's the great thing about these stories is we all think differently. We all have different perspectives. And it's really cool to see Jennifer's perspective on all these things, taking something that we kind of don't give a lot of thought to, "I can worship anywhere," and then saying, I was blessed with an eye condition. I don't know. Those two things just really stood out to me.
Yeah. You know what? Just hearing you comment on it, what stood out to me that I've never thought of before is it's sort of like this. The deer stand where you worship is like an easy run. The times that you're driving down the road and you're just talking with God, it's the easy run. Mm-hmm. Church is the workout.
It's the group run.
Yeah.
It's the workout together.
Yeah. It's the time when you work a little bit harder and you dig a little bit deeper and you have something that it's different, and it's something that we can be runners and never do a workout and be a okay runner. Mm-hmm. But you're never going to be the best runner you can be until you do those workouts. That's mm-hmm. kind of like church.
Sure.
You can't be the best Christian you can be without assembling with others and drawing from
others.
You're
also going to not see those opportunities to worship.
That's right.
If your spiritual life is confined to Sunday mornings, there's a good chance that all these opportunities to worship, all these opportunities to look at things that society would say are bad in your life, an eye condition, you start to see those in a different light. You see that those are a blessing. And yeah, I don't know. It's a tangled web, or we make it some kind of tangled web, but it's really not. It's really simple. We need to worship in everything we do. We need to have a family of believers that we gather with. And we should look at everything in our life. We should find the blessing in everything in our life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. 1 Corinthians 10:31, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So did you think about the movie Remember the Goal when you hear that?
No, verse? I mean, I know what you're talking about, but no.
I always think about that movie when I hear that, because it was the verse for that movie.
Well, you know, this morning, this is why Scripture is living, because we see something different every time. Have you ever wondered why Paul uses the phrase whatever you eat or drink?
Well, I assume it was because that's the most basic thing.
Yeah, that's it's probably the most mundane thing we do mm-hmm. in a day. Mm-hmm. I know it's
and most
you.
Essential.
To me, it's pretty exciting. You know, I love the process of getting ready for a meal and all that. But
I think it's the fact that it's essential.
Yeah, it's simply
it is basic, but it's essential.
It simply sustains us. When you boil it down to brass tacks, all it's doing is sustaining us. And you know, we could get behind the phrase, therefore, whether you're doing something big and flashy, do it all for the good. Because let's be honest, we want to give glory many times, and I'm just being transparent here, in showy ways.
Sure.
We ate dinner with Mark Yoho last night, and I talked about the time at the race and how God used a moment in my life where I thought it was a low point. I thought what I said to a crowd of runners was horrible. It was the worst thing I could have said, but it's exactly how God wanted me to say it. But mm-hmm. what did I want? I wanted eloquent words. I wanted a nice, you know, speech and I wanted to give God glory that way. But so many times God wants glory in the most mundane ways, because that is what the person looking at you needs. They don't need showy. They need the simple truth. They need the eat or the drink. They don't need the flashy thing.
And sometimes it's worse than that. Sometimes it's the opposite of showy. For example, you know, we've talked before about the time that I said some words I didn't want to say,
right,
on a run, yeah. And I had to come back,
sure,
and kind of eat crow to some degree.
Yeah, it was your humbleness.
I had to humble myself in that moment, and that's the opposite of being showy, right? And sometimes God calls us to do that, but mm-hmm. That's a good point. Deuteronomy 6:6-9 says, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Man, we can talk about God's words all day long, right? We all know people who probably talk about scripture and about biblical things, but then their life is different than what they say. Mm-hmm. And we got to be careful not to do that. This is saying that all of those words are important, but we have to internalize those things. They have to be such a part of us. They have to be all around us. They have to be inculcated into us in order for us to, for that, because that's what needs to come out of us. So when somebody squeezes us, that's what comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess what I think about when I hear this verse is it's saying to teach it, to talk about it, to walk in that way, whether you're lying down or you're rising up, to bind them as a sign on your hand. I think the thing that holds us back so much from doing this is the idea of accountability. We don't want to put ourselves out there so many times because then we're going to be held to that same standard. And we should be held to that same standard. I'll never forget I've talked about on this podcast before, the month before we started the very first Run for God class, I was a smoker. I kind of did it opposite. I ran marathons when I was a smoker. And it's not something I'm proud of. I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm saying that I tried quitting for years. I mean, I did the patch, the pill, the gum, the everything. But I'll never forget when I was preparing for that very first Run for God class, I realized that I was about to be held to a different standard. I could not in good conscience walk into my church to teach a class about honoring the temple that God gave us while smoking. And I laid them down. And it, so many times we won't do things because we don't want to lay that thing down. And if you can, I mean, like I said, I tried all the things. Mm-hmm. But the reason I never quit is because I really didn't want to.
Yeah.
But in December of 2009, the thing that I was moving toward was much bigger than that cigarette. So the moral of that, if you don't take anything, if you have a vice in your life or you've got something that you're trying to quit, whether it's alcohol or drugs or, you know, it's all the same. Addiction's all the same. You got to find something that's bigger than that addiction. And a life living committed to Christ is that thing. It's bigger than anything you've got going on in your life. And
amen.
That can help you kick it. I know I took a left turn there.
I'm going to take a U-turn.
Okay.
And because I wonder if we're about to get to that point. You know how you remember back when I was a kid, smoking was just something people did. I mean,
I know where you're going with this. Yeah.
I wonder if with food right now, if we're headed in that same direction where we're all going to finally realize, because for a long time, people didn't think smoking was bad for you.
Right.
And I'm wondering if with food we're about to hit that point where we go, wait a minute, this is bad. Yeah. We need to quit acting like it's not.
Yeah. And I think at least what we're seeing right now, I think that's coming.
Yeah, sure looks like it. 2 Timothy 4:7 says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith.
So you know how we do. We like to back up and get context. So I backed up to 2 Timothy 4, verse 5, and I started there this morning. And verse 5 says, but you be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. For I, Paul, am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. Then he goes on to say, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. That's very convicting for me because in our society, I almost said in my life, and I need to say in my life, I tried to put it off on society.
Mm-hmm.
But in our lives, is that not our goal, is comfort? Very, I mean, it is. Everything we do, everything we spend money on, is to try to make our life more comfortable. Now, I'm not standing up here saying that's wrong. But I said on here a few podcasts ago, I heard the phrase, we were made to suffer. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are you in a fight? Because Paul was, and Paul called us to be in that fight. He said, endure afflictions. That's pretty simple.
Yeah.
There's no mixing of words there. We're called to suffer. You know, we just had dinner last night with Mark Elho. We kind of had a night of celebration for Mark, mm-hmm. and what he's meant to our ministry, to us personally, to our community, and everybody that he comes in contact with. If you've never heard us talk about Mark, he's a giant of a man, 6 foot four, probably, what, 300, 300 and a quarter.
Yeah.
But he's a street evangelist. But the man's got a heart of gold. But Mark, and he didn't offer these stories up. I pulled these stories out of him because I wanted our team, my kids, to hear these stories that he talked about of how he puts himself intentionally. He puts himself in situations where he said, one time I was attacked, and then he said, no, let me, and he started counting on his fingers all the different times that he's been physically attacked. And I mean, you said last night to Mark, I hope it's okay if I say this, mm-hmm. but you said, you're one of those people that I can look at without you saying a word, and I can see Christ, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And this verse, if you back up just a little bit, it's really forces you to ask the question, are you in a fight? Or are you doing everything in your power to stay out of the fight? That's convicting. At least in my life, it's very convicting that we all, in some form, are called to be a modern-day Paul. And I think Mark Elho is one of the modern days examples of a person that we can look at to be like that.
I totally agree. Yeah. You know, in a much less serious role, I've never thought about this before as it relates to this verse, but from a running standpoint, a lot of times when we go through all the training that we go through for a big event, it's hard, right, mm-hmm. to go through all that. We sacrifice a lot. It's a lot of hard work. It hurts. There's a lot of things. But when you're standing a lot of times on that starting line, the satisfaction's already there. You haven't even run the race yet, mm-hmm. but it's already there. That's kind of where Paul is here. He's already done all this training. He knows his race is going to be finished. But
he knows
it's not
what's about to happen to him in the next few days.
Yeah. But he's just looking back and going, you know, all of that work, it was all worth it, regardless of how all this turns out right here. You know, and of course, in his case, he knows how it's going to turn out. But I mean, for a race situation, it made me think about how we want it to go well, mm-hmm. and we do everything we can to make it go well. But if it doesn't go well, we're still pretty satisfied.
A race is simply a representation of your training.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I guess it begs the question, you know, if today you get that diagnosis or whatever the situation may be that, you know, could be a real eye-opener to your mortality and your immortality. And I hate to get deep here, but are we going to – I ask myself the question. If I get that diagnosis today, knowing that I may be about to start that final 5K,
mm-hmm.
am I going to be happy standing at the starting line?
Yeah.
And that is very convicting because that's that starting line, and for that 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, how many ever more minutes, it's simply a representation of the years in the past. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's a great verse to ponder.
It is. question. There is always a starting line. In our faith, our starting line is when God calls us into a relationship with Him. You can never cross the finish line if you never start the race. Describe your starting line. Where did your testimony begin? I don't even know if I've talked about my start. The genesis of my faith and my journey, I guess, was when I lived in South Florida and there was a bus ministry. Mm-hmm. This church had a humongous bus ministry, brought in a few hundred kids every week through bus ministry. And we lived in a big mobile home park, mm-hmm, where there were hundreds of mobile homes in this mobile home park. And they filled up a bus from this mobile home park. And I was one of those kids. And that's kind of where I started. But of course, we were very active in our church. We moved, and when we moved to Georgia, we didn't really find a good church and kind of fell away. But, you know, then in college, I got just a shout out to a friend of mine that his name's Chuck Dyer. I don't know if you ever heard me talk about Chuck.
I don't think so.
But I worked with Chuck at the place that I worked while I was in college. And Chuck had a pretty profound impact on me because he was one of those guys who he was very open about his faith, but at the same time, he seemed so normal, you know? Like, we see some people and we think, if you're not a Christian, you see those people and you go, I don't know that I can ever be that. Mm-hmm. But Chuck was this picture of, this was a guy just having fun, but he never did anything outside of what God would want him to. He was a youth pastor, mm-hmm, actually. But he seemed so normal. And that so attracted me. I thought, I don't have to be something I'm not. Mm-hmm. I need to be what God wants me to be. And I think Chuck was a better
version of what you already are.
Yeah. He was a big influence on me. So the rest is kind of history. Once I got in, I really got going in college. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was 19 years old at Tunnel Hill First Baptist Church, and I heard an evangelist came in and was talking about the parable of the wheat and the tares, and man, mine was one of those situations where halfway through the sermon, I couldn't, it's like the altar call needs to get here. I mean, God was not letting me out of that place until I settled the issue of my eternity and where I was going to spend it. And I mean, that message just really rung my bell because, you know, it let me know that you can be something that looks good. You know, some weeds look a lot like wheat. Mm-hmm. But in the day of harvest, the end of your life, you know, the weeds are going to be separated from the wheat. And what does it say? It says the weeds are going to be burned. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what farmers do.
Yep.
Is you don't try to separate all this out while it's growing. You let it get to maturity and you separate it out at the end. And that message just really rung my bell. And so let me pause right here. So we've gotten pretty deep on the verses and this question. If you're listening to this podcast and, man, there's something inside of you that's saying, hey, this is hitting pretty close to home. I'm not sure about my salvation. We have a resource. It's runforgod.com/peacewithgod. runforgod.com/peacewithgod. There's a few simple short videos that'll walk you through the process of, you know, understanding where you stand in eternity. And I really ask you if there's that sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach, I know what it feels like because I was there when I was 19 years old. I know what that feeling is. That is a spiritual battle being fought between a holy God and your sinful nature. And just hear it bluntly from me. You need to deal with that. Go to runforgod.com/peacewithgod and watch a few of those videos. And if we can help out in any way, reach out.
Amen. Your race depends on your training. Our race of faith requires training. Pray about the following areas of spiritual discipline. How does your training need to improve so that you can run your race in the manner God intended? And she lists out daily time in the Word, prayer, fellowship, evangelism, and service. And of course, we don't have time to go through each one of those on this podcast. But I thought, you know, I wonder which one of these, I kind of looked at this list and thought, which one of these needs the most attention in my life? And I think prayer probably is the one, if not fellowship. Those are the ones that I probably need to work. I think everybody thinks their prayer life can be better. Mm-hmm. And it probably everybody's prayer life can be better. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of my, you know, I feel like I stay connected to God pretty regularly. But I don't have a real super intentionality about prayer. And I think you need both, mm-hmm. right? I think you got to have some intentionality and you got to have that hourly connection as well. And I don't always do well on the intentional part. I think I do okay on the casual, more casual part. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's what I think. I think I need to be more organized in it.
So one of my podcasts that I try to listen to at least once a week is the Dave Ramsey Show. And he said something yesterday that just, man, it really got me thinking because it can be applied to so many areas of our life. But he was on one of his rants. And if you ever listen to the Dave Ramsey Show, his rants are pretty epic. And his daughter was talking about, you know, some of these investing hacks, you know, these TikTok things that you hear. And he kind of got on a rant. He said, we are an icing first society. Mm-hmm. And what he meant by that is icing on the cake. He said, there's so many things out there that are icing on the cake, but we often forego the cake. And he was talking about, he said, people want great investment hacks, tax strategies to enhance their investing, but fail to actually invest.
Yeah.
They get hung up on the icing, all these cool things, but they don't do the cake. And it got me thinking, the other areas of our life in running,
mm-hmm.
you know, people want to try that new and unique running form while only getting half of their workouts in.
Yeah.
Do the cake first. Get the workouts in first. People want to read the newest and greatest Christian study while never spending a moment in prayer talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
Eat the cake first. Do the things that matter first. And because I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that newest Bible study sure. out there. But that is icing on the cake. You got to have that cake first. So don't worry about the icing until you've had the cake first, was Dave Ramsey's point.
I just thought
it was a great point that really went along with this question.
That is perfect. I love it. Yeah, I can't believe I haven't written a Dean's Thoughts about that. That just sounds like...
Well, there's the subject matter for your next Dean's Thoughts.
Describe the way you felt the last time you crossed a finish line. If you were to die tonight and cross the ultimate finish line of this life into eternity, would you be able to say, like Paul, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith?
The problem is every finish line I cross, I feel like I am about to die. That's why I don't like racing that much.
Well, my last finish line was not a good one. I ran the slowest 5K I have run since probably 18 years.
Okay, I'm going to prompt an eye roll out of everybody listening. What was your time?
19:26.
So eye roll. From everybody listening right now. Poor Dean ran 19. No. No, I get it. Yeah, yeah, I mean, and to answer the question, yeah. I mean, that is our ultimate goal. That should be our ultimate goal, is to have the posture of Paul when that day nears. I mean, there's part of me, I don't know, I'm not going to talk about that. Yeah. There's part of me, you know, you kind of think about, this sounds really weird. When you think about the end of your life, do you want it to be sudden? Or do you want to know it's coming? You know?
Yeah.
Part of me would like to have that moment of reflecting back. But part of me doesn't, because if it's sudden, then I'm in the presence of God. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's
kind
tough.
Of a weird thought, but
that's a tough question.
Yeah, I mean, that's our goal, right?
Yeah, yeah. When I think about this question, I feel like if I I mean, this is just complete honesty and openness. I feel like if something were to happen today, I would feel like I was going into that race mostly trained,
right,
but not completely. You know what I mean? I don't want that to happen.
But is there any person out there in the history of the world who goes in perfectly? Because even Paul said, I fought the good fight. Good, maybe not in those days, I don't know, but good to me indicates that there's more meat on that bone. I'm a believer that we're never going to meet that bar.
That's true.
This side of glory.
Yeah.
Just like you never have the perfect training block.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever had a perfect training block?
Doesn't seem like it.
No.
No.
And true. even if some other people would say, yeah, that was perfect, we're called to hold ourselves to a higher standard than where we're at. And in our walk with Christ, we can constantly do better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think everybody shares your sentiment that there's going to be more meat on that bone. The question is, are we doing all we can?
Yeah.
Or are we striving to do all we can?
Always seems to be more miles to run.
Mm-hmm.
Upward Sports Run for God Run Club is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness journey and your faith journey. You get these weekly podcasts, but there is so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there, too. If you're not a member, join today at runforgod.com. It is the best value you will find.
All right, we're back, and I found this article, again, from Canadian Running Magazine. I seem to find more stuff there than anywhere else. And this is entitled, How One Manitoba Woman's Running Brought Change to Her Community. So this lady named Sammy Powderhorn, and she's, you know, she is from a very small, secluded community. And Under Armour has teamed up with Canadian Running to produce what they call the Under Armour Diversity Series to kind of help people in their interactions with their community. And so this Sammy Powderhorn, she's a runner. She's very enthusiastic about her running. And she wondered, what is it that she could do, you know, through this Under Armour Diversity Series thing that they've got going on? And apparently what they do with this is, Under Armour gives material for her to be able to reach out to her community. And so what she's done, and she says, quote, running has really affected my life, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually as well. She adds, it's such an honor to be able to tell my story and to be that voice for all the Indigenous women who might be afraid to tell their story. So she's from this remote community called the Saisi Dene First Nation. It's a small reserve of roughly 300 people at Tajul Lake, a fly-in community located half an hour by plane from Churchill, Manitoba. She instantly knew how she wanted to work with Under Armour to donate gear this summer. It wouldn't be enough to just send shoes to the kids in their school there. She wanted to show them what was possible by organizing a run or walk the same day. And so she goes to this community and she brings all these shoes to these kids and they go for a run and she has kind of almost like a clinic kind of thing with these kids. And it has ignited this excitement for running in this community where there's 300 people living out basically on their own. Really, really cool. She had some problems with doing it. You know, everything... She had everything scheduled for Sunday. She was flying in Friday, and then they had some forest fires. Some other things got in the way, and she wasn't able to make it until Sunday morning, just hours before she had this get-together. But it all came together. She has this get-together, and it was pretty cool. So this community does this 5K out in the middle again of nowhere. She says it was so amazing to see because I got people out there that I never normally would see walking. And so she talks about this transformation and how important it was to her because she has had lots of hard situations herself. She came out of addiction herself and started to run. And she says, I'll do whatever it takes to be that positive athletic role model they need. And that includes some seriously early morning runs. It has to when you're a mom of six. If I don't run early in the morning, I won't be able to run at all, she says. I have to make my schedule according to my routine with my children, with work, with school. But if I don't run, I feel off and I don't feel like me. And it's important to me that my kids see my dedication to running and that I don't use them as an excuse not to run. One of my coaches said, if it's important to you, you'll make time for it. That's what I live by with my running. I was 250 pounds and battling addiction, and I know how far I've come. Hmm. A pretty neat story about this lady who really gave back to the to her community.
Yeah, I mean, it's she's a lady that took her passion and she shared it with others for the benefit of her community, which is what the 5K challenge is. That is the church model. Sounds like we need to get her.
I know, right?
As a coach. But yeah, I mean, that is incredibly powerful, not only to be the person doing that, but to be the recipient of sitting under somebody like her, because she's passionate about it and she knows what it can do for these people. And that's why she wants to share it. And at the same time, those people can look at her as the example saying, we can see what happened to her. We hear her story, and that gives them the confidence to go through it. And it's a win-win. You know, it's why we always say it doesn't matter if you're taking the class or you're teaching the class. It will change your life because it has as much impact on you as the coach teaching in these churches and in your community as it does on the people sitting under you.
Yeah.
And it's because you're simply sharing something that not only bettered your life, but you know it can better the lives of those you're teaching.
And that's the way it should be for all of us when we find something that we really love, is we should want to infect other people with that same excitement that we got. And I mean, that goes with our faith too, right?
Sure.
It's the same principle.
Right.
So pretty cool. And kudos to Under Armour for doing what sounds like a pretty cool program to try to get out into communities. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, there are a handful of men in my life who have had a profound impact on me. One of them was John Bagley, my former pastor. But he was also a runner and a run club member, and he passed away just recently, and I just wanted to honor him. And so I wrote something called, What Can I Do for You? I was scheduled to run the 2014 Boston Marathon, but about a week before race day, I was struggling with some issues with my left leg. It wasn't bad enough that I couldn't run, but it would probably affect my performance significantly. My pastor heard about the issue and sought me out just so he could pray for me. I remember thinking, our church and its members have many more pressing issues to worry about. Why would he take time out of his busy schedule to pray for a guy who was about to run the Boston Marathon? Well, it was because the man praying was John Bagley. I remember how John had come to our church. I was on the pulpit committee searching for a new pastor, and I heard about a guy who was a runner and seemed to be a good candidate for our church. I prayed for God to keep my mind open about this man. I didn't want the fact that he was a runner cloud my judgment or prevent God's urging from entering my heart. After talking with him, it felt clear to me that God wanted him to come to Cahutta First Baptist Church. I was relieved when all of the other committee members felt the same way. Needless to say, I was excited to have a running pastor. He came to our church and stayed for about 8 years. And I bet you're thinking that he and I probably ran some significant miles together. But we never once ran together. I think it was because he felt like he would slow me down, and John never wanted to do anything that would be an impediment to anybody. But he and his wife, Tammy, they ran together regularly. John only talked about his running with me under one condition, when I asked him about it. As a matter of fact, the only time I ever heard John talk about himself voluntarily was when he had a story to share that would further his attempt to help me with something I was going through. You see, the words I heard him say more than any other was, "What can I do for you?" That's because nearly every conversation we ever had ended with him asking me that question. But I wasn't special. John asked everybody that question. A few years ago, the Run Club had over 150 runners in the Disney Marathon. There was a time limit for the race, and many of our Run Club members were concerned about finishing the race before the sweeper picked them up. John was one of those runners. As the time ran off the clock and we approached the time limit, all I could think about was how he needed my help for once, and I couldn't get out onto the course to help him. Ultimately, he was one of the last few finishers, and I breathed a sigh of relief. Over the years, John helped thousands of people. I went on several of those missions with him, cutting up down trees and yards, helping widows by repairing home issues, and visiting sick people in the hospital. He always found time to help anyone who could use it. The truth is that we can't pay him back by doing things for him or even by doing things for his family. But what we can do, what I can do, is live a life with half the servant attitude he had. John Bagley changed me as a Christian and as a human being. I am forever in his debt. Today, he is praising God even louder than he did here on earth, and I hope that there is a marathon for him to run in heaven where the time limits don't exist and he can run as long and as fast as he likes.
That's a great tribute, Dean. John was a great man. I didn't know him well. Met him many times. But you're right. It's like his focus was always on the person he was talking to.
Yep.
And that's a great, great tribute.
Yep. Well, I've said before that I don't know anybody who displayed more Christ-likeness than John Bagley. Mm-hmm. And I met some good men. We talked about Mark Yoho. Mark Yoho is another one of those kind of guys. But, oh, my goodness. This was one of the best pictures, and I shared this last night, but one of the best pictures I've ever heard was a friend of mine was talking about how John was like a tree with the fruit of the Spirit hanging on him. Mm. And when he met with you, he had whatever fruit you needed. Mm-hmm. He had it on that tree. That tree had all the fruit, all the fruits of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. And whatever one you needed, he gave it to you. Mm-hmm. And then he went to the next person and picked off some other fruit. And he grew it all back because he always had something for somebody every single time. And it's just
a great picture.
Way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, he and Tammy, they're members of Run Club. They've run. I wouldn't be surprised if they ran the first Run for God race. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did, but they've been around Run for God circles for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was not a fast runner. Matter of fact, Tammy beats him at most races. but you know, we have a lot of Run Club members who aren't fast.
But hearing his life story, you wonder, was that his doing? You know, allow my wife. You know, I'm not saying that's what happened, but, you know, what could he do for his wife?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
you know what struck me about John was that I never heard John talk about him being a slow runner.
Yeah.
The only time he ever mentioned it was just in maybe comparing himself to me or something like that. Yeah. But, you know, this is a good lesson to everybody out there who is a, quote, slow runner. Mm-hmm. He didn't talk about it because it didn't matter, and he knew it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to make himself the subject. And when we start talking about ourselves and, whoa, I'm so slow, we're kind of making ourselves the subject when we do that. So don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about how fast or slow you are. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. And
John was a really good example of that. And you know, I think there's a lot of people out there like John. One of the things about John that, you know, we've talked before about Billy Graham and his son Franklin does the same thing. Anytime he's on whatever show he's on, wherever he's at, he finds a way to throw the gospel in there.
He knows what's coming at him.
Yes.
And he's going to, he's going to, He's going to bend it to the gospel.
And yeah, and they're masters, masters at doing that. Well, John was that way about not necessarily sharing the gospel as much as just making sure that he put God into every situation. Mm-hmm. That not just bringing God up, but in saying that situation you're going through, let's look at that through the way God looks at that. And he was so good at that. And man, I miss him because he was a great guy. As a matter of fact, the one thing that John did that was as meaningful as anything else to me was when my mother died, and I was having a really hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I need to do something. I think I don't know if he called me or he texted me or something, and I was like, I need to talk about this. And so John and I went down to the mall, and we walked around that mall for an hour and a half.
Really?
And and we just talked for an hour and a half. Yeah. And it was some of the most therapeutic talking I've ever done. Because he had a, as he did with everybody, he just thought my mother was great. You know, he thinks everybody's great. Mm-hmm. And man, I want to be more like him.
At Upward Sports and Run for God, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey. But we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. Sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you running and walking tips of the day and finish with a different encouraging quote in each episode. You must be a Run Club member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week I share a running. Every week I share a reason why running or walking is so awesome. And this week, I want to talk about how it changes our lives, right? We talked about Sammy Powderhorn and that story. We talked about Jennifer Gonzalez and how she changed. We've seen a lot of stories where it has just changed people's lives, whether that's losing weight or somebody kicked an addiction, somebody just became healthier, somebody had a chance to live longer, or just helped others like these two ladies that we've talked about, or like John. It can change your life, and it depends on how you use it, of course. But it can change your life physically, obviously, but also spiritually. So becoming active, if you're not already, can always change the direction of your life in profound ways if you're not active. Hmm. Well, are you on Strava?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Well,
Strava. I don't post a lot to it. I really don't post. I don't have my Garmin synced to it.
Do you not? Okay. Yeah.
Actually, I say I'm on Strava. Maybe I'm on Strava through Lane's account. I think that's actually what I log into when I go into it. But yeah, I love to get on the Run for God Strava group and look around. But yeah, I don't post. My Garmin account's private. I don't want everybody to see how slow I am. You know. And you just said, don't worry about how slow you are.
Well, if you don't know, Strava is an app. By the way, we need some people to sign up for Strava. We're one person, I think, shy of 600 members.
So on the Run for God Strava group.
On the running. We were at 599, and then I checked another. Somebody signed up, and I approved them. And I thought, okay, we're going to be at 600. And I looked in it. We were 598. So apparently a couple of people probably left the group.
One step forward, two steps back.
Yeah. So we need some more people to sign up. Anyway. It's an app, and it's a pretty neat app where runners, cyclists, walkers, people, they log their activity. You have a watch, you can have a Garmin, Coros, or whatever kind of watch you have that that tracks your activity, Apple Watch, whatever. And you can sync it to the Strava, and it keeps track of all these statistics, your heart rate and your pace and all of the things. And it's a pretty cool tool. We do, and again, the Run for God Strava group is almost 600 people. There's 125 million runners on Strava from 190 countries. And they just came out with this thing called Athlete Intelligence. And I think this is only for those people who subscribe and pay the monthly fee, which I do.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an example, okay? So this past weekend, I ran an 18-mile run. And what was odd about this run was that I stopped. I had forgotten to take my gels with me. Mm-hmm. I normally take gels with me, and I had forgotten. Well, I thought I could run back to the house, but you know, running back to my house is a hassle because it got that big hill to run up. But I didn't really want to do that. Plus, I hate running to the house and then going back out. You know, there's just something about not wanting
to
do
that. The temptation's too strong when
you walk in. Yeah, yeah. So the church is really close to my house. And I knew the church had some food for kids, you know, that we just kind of keep on hand.
Yeah.
And so I stopped at the church and I went in and I got me an oatmeal cream pie and a cookie just for fuel in place of the gels. Turns out it worked really, really well. And
oatmeal cream pie is like, I mean, that's the superfood.
It's great. Yeah. So this is what Athlete Intelligence on my Strava account, this is what it said. It said, impressive long run with a strong effort fueled by an unconventional but effective mid-run snack. Your pace and distance exceeded your recent averages, showcasing your growing endurance. Looks like you crushed a long, challenging run today, fueled by some unconventional but effective snacks. Your moving time was nearly double your typical 30-day average, and you hit some impressive elevation gains. The data shows you were operating mostly in your moderate and tempo heart rate zones, pushing yourself but maintaining a solid pace. Compared to your recent history, this was one of your longest and toughest runs, with a relative effort score that was well above normal. Keep up the great work. It's clear your training is paying off.
So how in the world did it know you had an unconventional but effective mid-run snack?
Because I put it in the comments. When I posted it, I put in the comments that I stopped by there.
So and it knows to flag an oatmeal cream pie as unconventional.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that it was not what I usually do.
Oh,
but
okay.
It interpreted all of that. I just thought that was really cool.
It's cool and it's scary.
That's
at
what
the
I was going to.
Same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So according to Strava, Athlete Intelligence employs the latest technologies to analyze complex workout data from the past 30 days. It identifies detailed patterns and peaks in your individual training so you can get a clearer and more meaningful picture of your running progress over the past few weeks and how you're faring against your goals.
So the only question I have is, now when you go on social media, how often do you see oatmeal cream pie ads?
I haven't seen any.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point, though. I'm surprised that
it's all intertwined nowadays.
Yep. But so does this creep you out, or do you think it's cool, or are you kind of in the middle, or?
I don't know. It creeps me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the AI stuff, really, you know. Do I think we're going to be Terminator, you know, in 10 years? No, but. I don't know. Some of it I think is a slippery slope, you know, where we were just in the attitude of this is cool. Man, we're just giving up information
we
right
are.
And left nowadays. And you
that
know,
is true.
Is it going to be used against us? I don't know. Probably not in our lifetime, but could it? Yeah, absolutely. It can be abused.
I think the only thing that really creeps me out from a technology standpoint at this point is the fact that your phone is listening to you when you don't think about it listening to you. That's the weirdest thing.
I listened to a podcast the other day, and this is another one of those podcasts I listen to, but I won't say the name. But they had a guest on there, and he was talking about, you know, what the amount of information we voluntarily give out on our phone, whether we know it or not, we are. And he said, imagine if the U.S. Postal Service came out today and it said, mail is now free. You don't have to do stamps anymore. You don't have to do anything. But the only catch is that the workers at the U.S. Postal Service, when you mail a letter, they're going to open it up and they're going to read everything in it. And they're going to use that information to sell you ads and to potentially be used against you. Nobody would agree to that.
That's true.
But yet we all agree to it every time we put these apps on our phone. And that is not conspiracy. That is true. You don't believe that, you're what is known as wrong. Read these things that you're agreeing to, and in your hurriedness and hastiness of getting that app on your phone, slow down and actually read.
Yeah.
All that stuff that you're agreeing to. It will probably be, it's much worse than what I just described with the U.S. Postal Service.
Yeah.
Okay, another example. You're also going to let the U.S. Postal Service people come and sit in your living room every night and listen to everything you're saying.
Yeah.
That is what's happening.
Yes.
Period.
It's true.
Whether we want to admit it or not. Because I use social media, so I'm not saying that I don't do this. Again, just like the food, do your own research.
Yeah.
Get educated about it. Don't put your head in the sand.
Yeah, and I would say you don't have, there are some things that you can do to limit some of that. Mm-hmm. You can research some of that and find out how you can limit some of it. But you're right. Some of those agreements that we agree to, we don't know what we're agreeing to.
Yeah. Well, that example of the postal, that really hit home. I was like, there's no way I would let that happen.
Yeah.
But I do.
To that point, how would you change your behavior if you knew the post office was reading all your mail? You would change it some. And you should do the same thing with social media and your phone, is you should make sure that you understand that somebody's paying attention.
Right.
Yeah. Well, our trivia question for this week is a very simple one, and it's this. What is the Wings for Life World Run, and why is it unique? I found this. I thought this was one of the most fascinating things. So if you know the answer to that, send it the answer to dean@runforgod.com and be the first one, and you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. What is the Wings for Life World Run, and why is it unique? Our motivational thought of the week comes from a lady by the name of Tunde Oyeniyin. I think that's how you say her name. I'm not sure. But she says, your mind is your strongest muscle. That's a good way to put it. Very simple, very straightforward. This lady is a Peloton instructor. So it's amazing where people are becoming famous these days, right? But this reminds me of the Henry Ford quote, whether you think you can or you think you can't, that's how powerful your brain is.
Yeah.
Your brain is so powerful, and it probably is your strongest muscle. All right. Well, we certainly appreciate you tuning in and listening to us ramble once again. We don't know why you do it, but we're glad that you do. And we sure do wish that you would share that with other people and let them know so that we can get even more people listening and being involved with all of the things that we do. Again, don't forget, if you've even thought about maybe possibility, maybe one day, maybe 10 years down the road or anytime, that you might want to be lead a class, make sure you let us know.
customerservice@runforgod.com, and we'll get you on the schedule for the webinar coming up end of the month.
Amen.
October 29th.
And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.